The Medical Alley podcast is brought to you by MentorMate. Custom software needs vary significantly. Whether you're powering a medical device, overhauling your back-end architecture, or reimagining your patient experience, MentorMate can help. Harnessing the technical excellence of Bulgaria, MentorMate provides end-to-end software services in all sectors of healthcare. With deep expertise in design, development, cloud, and software support, MentorMate helps healthcare clients administer world-class care through technology. Learn more at MentorMate.com.
Good afternoon. Thank you for joining us for an important conversation on making mental health a part of your corporate culture. I'm Jacqueline Wainwright, CEO of AeroCare Health, and I'm honored to be moderating today's webinar. May is Mental Health Month, and I'm joined today by an inspiring group of leaders to shed some light on this timely topic. Dr. Brian Williams, Chief Wellbeing Officer at mHealth Fairview, Lisa Dow, Director, Medtronics Employee Assistance Program, and Carrie Kleppe, VP of HR for 3M's Healthcare Business Group. Thank you all for joining me today. We're gonna get right into the questions here and get started. Dr. Williams, Fairview is an organization focused on the health and well-being of large populations. What wasn't working internally that required the creation of a new position to deal with mental health and well-being?
Thank you for that question. Well, I've been on the job for about 3 months now in this particular role, although I've been interested in well-being for a while. And, you know, there's a little difference between mental health and well-being, although, you know, there's clearly you need to have good mental health to be well. There's a culture in healthcare that isn't always the healthiest. You know, doctors and nurses, you would think knowing a lot about healthcare and prescribing healthy plans to people don't always follow their own advice. Now, some of that comes from a culture of having to be tough and kind of having to hold things inside so that you can be strong for your patients, but that's not healthy. And, you know, while we have offered services for mental health care and access to resources within our organization, like many large organizations do, utilization rates have sometimes been a little challenging to get to, partly because of that stigma and that culture. And the other issue with healthcare is that many licensed individuals actually have to attest that they don't have mental illness or that it's under good control and will stay that way to maintain their license. So a lot of them are afraid if that they reveal that they have mental illness that they'll actually lose their license, which isn't necessarily an unfounded fear. And so my position was created, in part to tackle what well-being, the things that degrade well-being in people. It's, you know, well-being isn't necessarily just a people problem. Traditionally, healthcare systems were relying solely on HR to fix well-being and to move upstream of that and to say that it's not just a person's lack of resilience, it's actually a systemic issue. It has to do with the industry of healthcare and how stressful it is. It has to do with the moral distress we face taking care of patients. It goes well beyond the typical scope of HR. That being said, HR is very well equipped to handle certain aspects of well-being, and mental illness, I think, still is one of those ways to connect and can be housed in there fairly well. So I really appreciate my partnership with our own EAP and our own clinical counselors and whatnot. But I am not a psychologist. I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not a social worker. I am a system strategist. And just understanding the problem in a new way is sort of what I hope to do so that we can get more acceptance and better utilization of our resources.
Well, it certainly gets me excited to know that you're thinking about it from a strategic and systematic standpoint, and that you're coming at it in that way instead of making it a program or point solution, you know, focused answer to what is a deeply embedded cultural problem. So excellent. I'm glad to hear that that's the role that you'll be filling and stepping into. Lisa, I understand that Medtronic has a unique approach to the traditional employee assistance program, and it's resulted in high engagement rates. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Thank you, Jacqueline. And I made some notes. So if you see me looking down, that's what I'm looking down at, so I don't lose my thoughts here. And yeah, absolutely. Our employee assistance program at Medtronic is really heavily utilized. And when we look at our data, across our vendor's book of business, we are consistently double the engagement and utilization rates across all the different buckets of service that are provided through our EAP program. And I'll be honest, that does not come without a lot of work going into it. We just really can't bring on EAP programs and check the box saying we have an EAP and then hope for the best or let the vendors kind of manage the EAP for our companies. We really need to take a very opposite approach. And I hit on some really key buckets that I think really impact and influence our EAP, because our EAP really is in the DNA of Medtronic. And I'll talk in a bit about what that means versus it being an EAP program that sits in benefits and is that secretive counseling program tucked off in the corner. And some of the key components that go into that is we do have an internal team of psychologists and licensed psychologists. So we are a team of six who are Medtronic employees. And we really are the psychological experts, bringing that psychological expertise to the whole organization and also managing the EAP strategy as well and what the services are and ensuring high quality customer service to all of our employees around the globe. And that really makes the difference of having that dedicated team of psychologists and counselors to really set that course, set the stage, and really working in strong partnership with our vendors as well. And that's really a key piece, is that partnership with the vendors. We work daily with our vendors in making sure that their services and their customer service approaches are really meeting the needs of our employees and the organization. And we do that through weekly meetings with the account managers. In each of those meetings, we do work from action plans that have very specific steps and strategies and initiatives around engagement. We do tend to push very hard for more customization with our vendors versus the one size fits all across all of their book of business. And we also really hold our vendors and really partner with them on fresh, innovative ways of delivering and promoting and getting EAP in front of our people, because we all know just putting a flyer out there, that's not EAP, you know, it really isn't. So what are some engaging ways to connect with our population? The other items that I was thinking about here as well is we are also in near constant engagement with stakeholders throughout the organization. That's with our leaders, our human resources, our employee relations, security, legal, communications, and the list could probably go on and on, where we do have a lot of engagement meetings, a lot of partnership meetings with them. We also engage a lot with our employee resource groups and our wellness groups as well, and really look for those symbiotic overlays or intersection points where how can we together across these partnerships really enhance and promote EAP and also help promote and enhance their respective programs as well. And we do a lot of strategy meetings with our stakeholders. One example right now is with India, in regard to what's going on in that country regarding COVID, and the country is in crisis right now. So we've been working very closely, coming up with very specific communications initiatives that are relevant for India versus coming in with a generic overlay. And the last item here that I have to confess I've been working at for a long time and it finally came to fruition is we now have a dedicated full-time comms and marketing person for our EAP program. And that has made a world of difference. Having somebody with that background and those skills where that is their dedicated focus has really just elevated our program significantly.
It's unbelievable the work that's being done within your program and making sure that it's part of the corporate culture and strategy. I'm definitely hearing a theme here in regards to the importance of well-being and corporate strategy. Carrie, can you talk a little bit about the healthcare business group's strategy on supporting employee well-being and what are some of the unique issues that have come up over the last year?
You bet, Jacqueline. Thanks. It's so nice to be with everyone today. So as Jacqueline mentioned, I am the VP of HR for Healthcare Business Group at 3M. We have a global healthcare organization, and I have a team of HR professionals that partner with our leaders to drive all sorts of people strategies as it pertains to the business. And, you know, as we as a leadership team talk about our teams, you know, people are number one resource, ensuring that we have employees that can thrive, that are being set up to be successful is key to our success. And so as we went into the second half of 2020, it was clear to us that we had a workforce that was tired and stressed. We had a workforce that pretty much had transitioned to working from home outside of, you know, manufacturing and some other key roles, which led to an expansion of the workday. We had employees talking about feeling like they were living at work instead of working from home. We had various levels of COVID fatigue, personal stress based on their own individual circumstance associated with the pandemic, and lots of challenging nuances associated with, you know, working out of a home office, managing children who maybe weren't in school, babies who maybe weren't in daycare, and a really challenging business environment. So as many medical businesses, our business was under, you know, a lot of turmoil last year with all of the uncertainty with the pandemic. And so as a leadership team, it was clear to us that we needed to take some pretty specific action to ensure that we were taking care of our people. And there are a few things that we did. First, the group president and her operating committee really talked a little bit about what we were seeing, what our teams were experiencing, and set the tone from the top. Our leader really shared some personal challenges that she was facing, along with things that she was doing to better support herself through the pandemic. She gave space to the team to say no, to step back and pause and really focus on not just delivering what we need them to do on the business side, but taking care of themselves and their families with everything that was going on. We felt it very important to equip leaders with supporting their teams on a daily basis, that employee-leader connection is so critical in really understanding the individual circumstance and needs of our people. And so we provided resources to our leadership team around, you know, how do you coach and probe to understand? How do you stay connected with a now pretty much virtual team? What are the resources that are available to support your team members based on their own individual challenges? You don't have to be an expert, of course, but how do you direct and intervene where you see people who are struggling or who have, you know, challenges that they're bringing to you? We also created some opportunities for them to kind of support themselves. So, you know, EAP is a strong partner for us at 3M as well. And, you know, they provided a number of sessions on resiliency for our people leaders, ways, again, like tips and things people can do to better support themselves. And so we did a number of things as we went into the start of this year, and it was clear that we needed to also drive some sustainability, I think, in those actions. And so another thing that we did in 2021 was launch a cross-functional global leadership team to address organization and personal well-being, so organizational personal health. So the charter for that team is to think about sustainable solutions to support our employees and support our leaders during a very challenging environment. So we have, like I said, a global organization. And so while in the U.S., there is a bit of a light with the vaccine and other things starting to feel like we can get back to some normalcy, that's not the case everywhere. You know, Lisa talked about India. We have a large population of employees in India. So being conscious of the fact that we have a global organization at different spaces and different personal needs. And so this team is chartered to identify strategies that we can deploy globally. So there's some unique things that we're starting to roll out things such as, you know, one day a month where there can be no internal meetings, right? A day for people to refocus on stuff that's most important to them. Giving empowerment to employees to really prioritize and maybe stop some of those less important things to focus on the things that are most important to driving the business to create space for them on a personal level. Being thoughtful about how we're protecting our time out of the office in terms of vacation. So a number of things that we're deploying out of this newly formed team that, again, is all around creating a work environment that really allows our team to thrive and provides resources to those folks who are struggling. The last thing I'm going to offer, and then I'll turn it back to you, Jacqueline, is that, you know, that's some of those strategies we're deploying at the healthcare business group level. You know, 3M has done a nice job of really focusing on raising awareness and support around mental health. So we did a number of things back in the fall around Mental Health Week. And this month we launched a new employee resource network solely focused on mental health. In terms of raising awareness, offering resources and support, and driving advocacy, and really, I think, starting to bring to the surface the very real struggles that many of us have in our, you know, personal lives, and, you know, that then transition into our work lives. And so we have a number of things going on this month with Mental Health Awareness Month, and we're trying to do our best to ensure that healthcare employees are aware and can participate in some of those good sessions and offerings.
It's amazing the work and thought that's going into making mental health a real part of the corporate culture. I'm hearing a lot of awesome suggestions and things that organizations have already done. I want to jump in to one of the questions that's coming in because I think it has partly been answered, and I'd love to be able to answer it for the audience here. How well attended were you both Lisa and Carrie, and actually I think Brian also mentioned EAP sessions, and I know engagement has always been a difficult subject to tackle. So this person's asking, how well attended were those EAP sessions at the organization? And, you know, do you feel that engagement is where you'd like it to be from an EAP standpoint?
So I'll jump in first real quickly. So when we look at the data from calendar year 2020, and we're just now compiling data from quarter one of 2021, is in 2020, we provided 6,000 initial counseling sessions globally. That's not including all total, but just initial counseling sessions. And that was a 43% increase from the previous year. And in regard to the workshops and trainings that we provided those to 14,000 attendees in 2020. And that was nearly a 50% increase from the previous year. And from what I see right now with our data and just what I know by line of sight is those numbers are not necessarily decreasing. And I did peek at one of the questions in the Q&A is the areas we're seeing the most increase around is anxiety and stress, not surprising, but also substance abuse, absolutely. And then also domestic violence as well. And we anticipated both of those, and also suicide as well. Is something we as companies need to pay attention to, and what support are we bringing to our employees around those really critical, very difficult areas.
Carrie or Brian? Yeah.
Yeah, I'll jump in. So participation's always tough because people are super busy and stressed, right? So that's why we're having the sessions. And so I would say that we tend to see typically anywhere from 25 to 50% live participation for the audience that we invite. So the resiliency sessions, as an example, for that we're focused on people leadership. We also record them, and so people can access that information later. Because of that, we try and have, you know, a number of different opportunities for leaders to engage and learn if they can't attend a session. And so it's something we continue to focus on. I think the tone from the top and senior leadership support and, you know, their emphasis on the importance of leaders really engaging and supporting their teams, I think created space for people to opt in and take more advantage, but we still have some more work to do there.
Brian,
I echo all of that. And, you know, we struggle You know, we're not a global company, but, you know, spread out over 9 hospitals and 50 something clinics, we sometimes have a hard time convincing people to either drive somewhere or dial into things on their own times. And it's really important to meet people where they are. And that really, you know, somebody asked a question about leadership and the culture of well-being. We really need those leaders to help us understand how to get in to people. And our EAP team has been very flexible. When a nurse leader says, you know, I started a conversation, we all agreed it might be helpful to talk about some of our feelings, could you come to, and I can get them to cycle off of their duty at the end of shift. If you can come right then before they leave for the day, we can have a group session. Another leader said, we normally have our business meeting at this time, I'd like to dedicate it to this. They already have it blocked on their calendars. We're not asking them to do something new. We're just going to talk about this instead of the usual business. For group sessions, you know, I think you have to be creative on how to capture a busy audience. And it really does require those leaders, because there's no way, you know, EAP can know all the dynamics of every type of team there is. And so that is important. And I think EAPs and the various other mental health teams need to find a way to dialogue with those leaders, and the leaders need to understand the importance of it. And I think that is, it's EAP is always helpful when they're deployed. It's just getting in there. It's getting your foot in the door and getting people to accept the help or ask for it. It is the real key that I've seen. So again, the theme of leadership and the other thing that I would say, and maybe you're going to get to this, is leaders need to understand that being vulnerable is being strong. You know, a lot of our leaders traditionally felt that they just needed to be strong. And that creates a role model that isn't always healthy for the people. Like, this person never talks about their feelings, therefore it's not okay for me to talk about my feelings. Those leaders that can be a little vulnerable and admit when they are stressed or admit when they are under pressure tend to get much more, it's much more effective leadership style that gets people more engaged in taking care of themselves and realizing it's okay to do that. And saying, and I met with EAP myself and I got a lot of help from them. Just that little thing goes so far in getting your team to seek out help if they need it. So I really can't emphasize enough how important leaders are in all of this.
I think that's so true. How can we make programs available to our people, to our employees, and expect them to utilize if we're not willing to pick up the phone and utilize the program or talk about what we're struggling with? Being vulnerable is being courageous. A courageous leader shows their vulnerability. And I think also one of the things that we don't necessarily do well in our roles as leaders is to show people what support looks like for us, right? Support looks different for everyone. And so if as a leader, we can say, I'm having a hard time and this is what support looks like for me. You can support me by, taking this off my plate or answering the phone when I call, or giving specific examples, because I don't think we're great as a community at telling people what we need, right? Asking for help in a way that people can respond. And so as leaders, I think we have that responsibility to say, I am struggling in this way, and this is how support looks for me, right? This is what it looks like. And so giving that direct, you know, sort of feedback to the teams that you serve and leading by example. Great conversation. Yeah, Dr. Williams, you talked a little bit about what needs to change or this culture of, the stoic, I'm fine mentality in the workplace. What is the one thing standing in the way of making mental health a priority for your population?
I would say it's that culture of okay with not being okay. You know, the idea that you have to be tough, as we've already mentioned, gets in a way of a lot. Our EAP is fairly well utilized, but it's those people that need it the most that I'm the most worried about. You know, we in healthcare suffer suicides in our workers. And one of the universal themes we hear, some of them are getting a lot of help, but too many of them we hear from their families They never admitted they had a problem. They never sought out help. We didn't have any idea that it was completely internalized. And that just points to a toxic culture. Why did that person feel that way their entire career? And again, some of this is that what you talked about, the logistics of the licensing issues, but our EAP doesn't record diagnoses. You can safely go there and not worry about it landing on a state board application. Very few people understand that. And so there are ways around those policies. And I, in my capacity, am working to change some of those rules at the state level, as well as our credentialing policies. But in lieu of that, there are still ways to get help. I really think that culture of stoicism set up by our forefathers, as it were, it needs to evolve, and we need to be better at being vulnerable and being open with each other.
Lisa, how do we sustain? I know Medtronic certainly seems to have the momentum within the organization with the focus on mental health. How do you sustain that? How do we sustain that so that it's not just the topic du jour due to the pandemic?
And I appreciate this question because it is something that I've been concerned about. Is we really don't want mental health to become cliche, and we don't want it to be the topic du jour, like you mentioned, because people, even now, when we talk about resilience or resilience trainings, I can almost see their eyes sometimes rolling up. So really taking a different approach without always having to put the big mental health label on it. And I want to come back to that with an example in just a second, because I do want to circle back to something Brian mentioned earlier, is mental health within companies, regardless of their size, cannot be an HR initiative. Those initiatives tend not to have longevity or staying power and might not always really hit in an impactful way. I'm not throwing babies out with the bathwater here. They have their place and their purpose. But one example that comes to mind that I've seen across multiple organizations is trying the initiative around meeting-free Fridays. And what a lot of companies have noticed happening is those meetings that would be scheduled on Friday are now being scheduled earlier in the day or later in the day, the rest of the days of the week. It hasn't necessarily lessened the number of meetings. It's just shifted and is now creating longer days for other employees. So I think it's really, for others, excuse me. So I think it's really important because that example also illustrates what's the core driver behind all these meetings. Is it a culture that tends to collaborate and is over collaborating now in the attempt to stay connected during the pandemic? And if that might be the case, you know, what might be some strategies through leaders, role modeling, et cetera, to try to get to those core drivers versus an initiative that might just overlay the top of what's really happening. The other example I want to share is, again, we don't always have to come in heavy with mental health, mental health, mental health. It is talked about everywhere. I turn on public radio, mental health. I turn on the news, mental health. I look at BBC, mental health. So it is everywhere, which is fantastic for psychologists like ourselves. But again, we have to be careful of weariness from employees. And one example that we help support our employees' mental health at Medtronic is through our Emergency Assistance Fund. And what that is it provides financial grants to employees who are experiencing a hardship. We provide grants to help them get out of domestic violence situations if they've been impacted by COVID, help support them through natural disasters and so forth. And the reason I'm bringing that up as an example and how that touches mental health is we know very clearly financial stress really significantly impacts people's mental health, especially when they are in a crisis or a critical situation. It just compounds it. And for employees to be able to tap into this resource is hugely impacting on their mental health. And it also helps the mental health of those employees who have donated to this fund, because our fund is funded pretty much completely by employee donations. And the research is very clear that when employees see their company offering this as a means to help other employees, it increases affinity towards the employer, but it also really has that good feel about it. You know, like when we show gratitude, for example, it just feels good. So those are a couple of my top of mind thoughts in regard to how not to make this just a topic du jour, but how to have more sustainability and really truly impact our mental health with our employees at a deeper level.
Absolutely. And as you were speaking, a question came in about, I know we were speaking previously about vulnerability and the difference between vulnerability and weakness. This particular question is about how do you differentiate between vulnerability and weakness? Because it seems as though weakness or vulnerability gets attacked. And I'd just like to steal a Brené Brown saying for a second and say that vulnerability without boundaries is not vulnerability. It's a little bit of a hot mess, right? You need boundaries. You have to. It doesn't mean that you can just say what you think and feel at any given moment. I mean, that's holding someone hostage in a lot of ways, right? Vulnerability means to be human, but not without boundaries. It does not mean that you dump the weight of the world on your team because it makes you feel better, right? It means that you share a human feelings and you lead by example, but that there are boundaries to the vulnerability in the workplace that you exhibit. So I'd love for any of you to jump in and share your thoughts on that statement and maybe how you are differentiating between vulnerability and weakness within your own organization.
One caveat that's the reality of the situation is it is okay for some types of people to be more vulnerable than others, because you expect some to display that, and that's not always fair, is it? The type you might stereotypically least think should be vulnerable might be more scrutinized if they are, and then others you might want to be vulnerable and they're not. You think of them as not compassionate, and that is the work of equity and just culture and understanding your organization, and these things are all intertwined. And so I think that's something to be cognizant of when we talk about, you know, these preconceived notions of what kinds of leaders we have and what where they're coming from, because it can be damaging in certain situations. But I agree with what you said, the differences between vulnerability and weakness. There is a fine line, but the really good leaders know how to do this in a way that creates empathy and morale, rather than fear of like, oh gosh, this person's going down, we're going down with them or her, right? There's a way to do it. I'd ask the others if they have specific examples of the way you can word that.
For me, vulnerability is about asking for help, and you're asking for help with a little bit of risk because it's scary for whatever it is, for whatever reason. And so I don't know if I have a good description for why it's different from weakness, but for me, if someone's asking for help, they need help. And as a leader, as a human, as a person, it's our responsibility to help them in whatever that looks like. If it's help like with their work situation, figuring out a path to support, if it's help for a personal situation, getting them to the experts that can participate. And anyone in my organization that looks at someone who's asking for help as a weakness, that's not going to fly with me, right? And so there's coaching that would happen with that leader, because we all are trying to do our best job. My view is that 99% of the time, employees have positive intent, that they're trying to do their very best. And if they pause and ask for help, it's because they're struggling and they need some help. And frankly, that tells me that it must be pretty bad, because we don't always have a culture where people feel like it's safe to raise their hand and say, I need some help, you know, with how dynamic the working environment can be. And so that's what I would offer, is let's all remember that we're people and humans first and employees second. And then I think that alone will help us get us to a better spot.
And I have a little different take on that and some success we've had within our company in regard to the vulnerability piece. And this is really a lot with our leaders, those on the front lines, helping support employees and the organization through COVID, et cetera. Is a lot of times they don't feel, or they actually don't have the time to take care of themselves and look at their own reactions and responses to helping, again, support through a natural disaster or through COVID. So what we did over the last year is we brought the supports to the folks being impacted or that we saw being impacted either emotionally or psychologically in responding to all the needs globally that COVID brought to our company. And what I mean by that is we gently introduced just normalizing people's reactions and responses when they're in a leadership role or in an HR role or an ER role. You know, here's what you can expect and what you're probably experiencing in helping support the organization and employees' families through a pandemic. So just really trying to bring the support to them by normalizing, being able to attend their team huddle meetings, their team meetings, just to take 5-10 minutes to talk about that. We also offered very confidential support groups. We didn't quite call them support groups, but really conversation groups. And again, really focused on some education and then also opening it up for people's questions or thoughts or what they might be experiencing. Again, really normalizing. So we really tried to take the approach from the big mental health, you know, that can really feel kind of heavy and top down, but just entering through their reality and really trying to help convey that we see the reality, we get the reality, we really want to hear more about how the reality is impacting you and affecting you, and here are some safe avenues and places we've created to help support you, you know, being on the front lines and so forth. And that's actually worked quite well, because that vulnerability piece is tough, especially for those who are in a leadership position and feel they have to be on all the time. They, you know, it's always the caregiver who takes care of themselves last, you know, and I think we have to find ways to not let that continue to be the norm, because it's so damaging for those folks.
Well, great comments and great questions coming in from the audience as well. I'd love to hear everyone's response to how you fight burnout on a personal level. I think that's a great question. And I think as we're talking about, it's an individual, they're individual problems, right? So let's give the audience some feedback, maybe share a little bit of a personal experience and how you cope to give the group listening a little insight.
I am trying to be better this year for 2021, because 2020 was not great at it. And so this year I'm trying to create some boundaries for myself, because especially last year, you couldn't go anywhere. You really were stuck at home most of the year, so you could work really all the time. And so this year, I'm trying to just create some space on my calendar so that I'm not in meetings 24/7, that I do have some space for like thinking and working, and that I have time built out at some point in the day to do things that give me energy back. And it might be walking the dogs. It might be going on a run. It might be going to, now that the kids are back in activities, a soccer game or a track meet. Because I found last year that it was, you could just tell when you didn't have any, when you were putting all that stuff to the side, like I wasn't doing my best work. And I wasn't the happiest. And so, you know, the work is always going to be there. And so it's not that I'm like not getting certain things done. I'm just trying to be more deliberate about how I'm creating space to also prioritize the stuff that frankly is more important to me. Doing good at my job, of course, is super important, but that family stuff and that personal well-being stuff is as important. And so I've just been trying to carve out time to make sure that I can do it. And then ensuring that I have a sounding board who I can problem solve with, or who I can vent to, or who I can just connect with, because you can get a little bit isolated too when you're working out of a home office and you're not seeing people. So trying to be thoughtful about those connections as just a resource that can help. So that's what I've been trying to do.
Brian, how about you?
You know, one of the exercises I've been thinking a lot through is the positivity to negativity balance in your day. And that's not something you just sit back and let happen. You have to seek out positivity, and it can be trained. And this has actually been studied medically. People that seek out and work on some exercise of positivity Ryan Sexton at Duke has written extensively on this, the three good things at the end of your day. If you think through those three good things and do that every day for 2 weeks, it's just as effective as taking an SSRI with no side effects, as it were. And I've done that, and it works. And so if you can surround yourself with positive people and take the time to think, that actually worked really well, and give yourself a little praise, and or, you know, think hard on that, because we as humans tend to focus on the negative, and that goes without saying. This last year, doom scrolling through my phone and reading all the bad news all the time, taking care of COVID patients in the ICU, you'd think I'd be devastated, and it was hard work. But we focused on the patients we got out of the hospital. Not that we didn't, I mean, we cared for everybody, but, you know, what would seem like routine business, we just helped somebody survive the pandemic. That's a really big deal. And we focused on those numbers, and that positivity tends to just to help in so many ways than just focusing on the negative outcomes or the bad parts of your day. And it takes intention. You have to make yourself do that, because if you just let yourself default, you will linger on the negative things. And if you feel bad at the end of the day, think back through, like, where did you slip up? What did you let linger that you probably shouldn't have? Because I think that kind of helps get some resolve so that you can be with your family that night and not be stuck on something that you don't even recognize was a driver of that all day long. And so self-awareness and being intentional about being positive is what I would say is my advice to people to take care of themselves. And you'll find that that guides your leadership when you help others that you either mentor or lead as well.
Lisa, did you want to weigh in? Any tips on what you're doing personally?
Sure. Yeah. And what comes to mind are three different buckets. And the first one was that was just so important for me is I had three different pods of friends, and we were very intentional over the last year of staying in contact on a very regular basis through Zoom, through email, through phone, very distanced gatherings and so forth. And they really kept me sane. And the trick I learned, and I didn't realize it was a benefit at the time until a few months into the pandemic, is most of my friends are retired. They did not want to hear about work. They did not want to talk about shop. So it was kind of a natural way of not rehashing and reliving every single day. So that was really beneficial. And I also booked out every single day, including Saturday and Sundays, because our work rarely has time parameters when you work globally during a pandemic, is from noon to one. Every single day was my dedicated time to either take a nap, do my hobbies of painting or walking or what have you. And I really stuck with that. And also just really turning off the news. I was such a news junkie when the pandemic was happening. For those of us in the US, we had a lot of drama, if I can say that, going on politically, with social change, with George Floyd and so forth. It was just so much. And I found myself glued, like I need to know what's going on. And it was really affecting me. It was just too much. So once I figured out that TVs have an on-off button and radios have an on-off button, made a huge difference.
Great tips. I think we are living in a overwhelmingly wired and productive world where all day and every day you're expected to be on, and that's not possible, right? So I think managing expectations among your own expectations, your team's expectations, and the expectations that you have as a leader, so that we can take the time to celebrate, as Brian mentioned, the wins, right? And we can set time aside to do hobbies and have a life outside of work. The world has become super hyper-focused on efficiency and effectiveness. And I don't know that humans were necessarily built to thrive on efficiency and effectiveness as fuel. And so just remembering at the end of the day, that growth comes in a lot of different forms, and that growth can come from setting a boundary and taking time for yourself. And it sounds like those are things that you all have been practicing, and hopefully we can take some of those away and continue to practice them. There's just great questions coming in. I'm trying to see if we can get to them all, but want to make sure we ask this last question, Carrie. the last year was filled with challenges, obviously, and therefore, I'd like to say opportunities to change and do something differently. Is there a key learning that's changed how you as a leader approach mental health and well-being that you could share?
Yeah, thanks, Jacqueline. You know, I mentioned that I have a global team, and what I maybe didn't mention is that I took this position in January of 2020. So new team right before the pandemic really hit globally. And I had to very quickly figure out how I was going to connect and build trust quickly with my team, because I knew that we were going to have a tough working environment for the year. That became pretty clear in March. You know, the pandemic to the side, we had a lot of work underway in healthcare business group that my team was driving. And so when the pandemic hit, it just sort of exploded. And so as a leader, you know, what I care most about are the people that I work with and the team members that work with me, and that, you know, we're successful in getting the most important stuff done. And so, and again, as I sort of mentioned earlier, that can only happen if people are thriving and maybe, you know, just a titch more than surviving. And so, ensuring that I was creating space for the people that reported to me to speak up when things weren't going well, that I was connecting on a pretty regular basis in this virtual world, and where I started to get a sense that maybe things weren't going well, that I could sort of probe and offer support. And then as a team, just reflecting on it's hard right now, and maybe making it okay for people to be like, this isn't working. Because there was a point mid-year where I was like, this is hard and I'm struggling. And anyone on this team who isn't struggling, you have to tell us what the secret sauce is, because it would be astonishing to me if you weren't. And so I think just kind of normalizing, number one, that we're all in it together and that it's okay to not be okay, but then to very quickly figure out what are we going to do about it. And so I tried to ensure that we had, that we were celebrating successes and acknowledging all the accomplishments throughout the year, and that we were supporting one another when people needed help or space, and that being really clear on here's what really matters. You matter, your family matters, and then work matters, right? So take care of those first two things first, and we'll figure out the work stuff. But then on the work side, here are the main priorities. And at a point in the year, I was really like, I only really care about these two things. The rest of the stuff, I don't care about, right? Like, that doesn't mean that if you have a leader who needs help with X, that you just say, you know, Carrie said that I only care about these two things right now. But my point in being that we can't do it all, and that there's certain things that we're gonna have to prioritize for later, and giving people, I think, the support and saying no to certain things and being a bit more able to prioritize. And so is that really specific to how I'm going to lead differently in the future? I think so. I mean, I think a lot of that stuff is what we do every day as leaders. I think it was heightened last year, given the challenges that people face. But I think it's something that will carry forward, making sure people understand that, you know, work matters, other stuff matters just as much. And I'm here to help you figure out how to, you know, be successful in all and being a resource to the team that creates the space for people to feel like it's safe to speak up so that we can problem solve and figure out a path forward. You know, I'm not perfect. I have two daughters, and, you know, the pandemic at the start, they're older, they're teenagers. I was like, they're doing great. And then you'd have like a blip in one day where one of them wasn't doing great. And I'm like, oh, you know, it's not easy. And so it's kind of just realizing that you're not going to always know what's going on, and just being somewhat flexible in addressing whatever, you know, comes down the path, I guess, both personally and professionally.
Great insight. And I think we've talked a lot about what strategies, what organizations are doing. We haven't talked a lot about how to make the financial argument, or how organizations are investing in this and getting buy-in. Because I think at the end of the day, We all know the research, the data that shows that by investing in mental health and making it a priority, costs go down, productivity goes up. But how do you make that argument within your organization? How do you allocate dollars? What's the financial argument that maybe you've had or you can help others to have within the organizations to make sure funds are allocated for this type of programming?
Jacqueline, that's a tough question. And I'm going to defer to Brian or Lisa because I do not know. I'm not at the center. And so I don't know.
You know, that's why I was sitting here quietly. Somebody else go first on that one. Yeah, that is the...
All right, fine.
Yeah, that is an evergreen question. And it's really hard because it's really hard to equate, at least from an EAP service perspective, you know, what we do to how does that translate to dollars? And many, many attempts have been tried with that, with return on investment and so forth. But it always seems just to kind of fall flat. So whether this is right or wrong, it's working, you know, I guess from my perspective is really sharing the stories, showing the impacts, not just through the percentage points of 10% of the employees utilized our services, but engaging with the communications person to tell the stories, you know, of course, with permissions and all that, but share the stories and how utilizing the services, you know, that might be mental health related have really impacted an employee or their family. And just, I don't know, I'm even struggling how to answer this as I'm talking. It's just continue to saturate through the organization, because I think Brian made a really good point is, you know, when people share their own stories unsolicited, that's where the biggest value often is. In how we saved an employee, how we helped an employee, how that maybe impacted the organization in some way. So that's top of mind. I wish I had a really formulaic answer of do this. It's just really continuing to make your program, your services relevant, communicate that, penetrate into the organization. I mean, kind of make it hard, you know, for them to say no, I guess. So yeah, those are my top of head answers.
And I think this is one of my primary jobs is to advocate for all of the different resources and efforts that go on. You know, the literature would say that happier employees, you know, make less mistakes, they call in less sick, they utilize less if you have your own health plan, less resources because they're healthier. They are less likely to quit their jobs. They are more likely to recommend their jobs to other people because we need to hire people. All of these things have financial implications. Can you directly correlate them as easily as you'd like to? Not always. We have this calculator we do simply for the physicians in our organization. It costs an exorbitant amount of money to replace a physician. And if you just look at them alone and look at, you know, the AMA has this thing, a burnout calculator, and you can calculate how many people you think you lose, physicians you lose to burnout every year based on the number you've measured, which we measure. And the number, the dollar value is staggering. Yeah, it's in the millions of dollars every year. And if you make the argument that you could have prevented maybe two of them from quitting, that would pay for a lot of resources and programming and employees. You know, every other organizations may have a similar tactic or approach. But I think there's an overwhelming amount of evidence that, you know, people that are healthier will make you more money or help your bottom line or help you deliver the product you want to do. But it takes a leap of faith by some of the people that are in the corporate world to understand that. And they have to believe it because it is not the typical way to do business. But there are organizations that have proved it, right? They thrived on making the people the focus of their company. You know, you're our most important resource. We're going to invest in you, and that's going to help us be successful. And time again, case study after case study, that's panned out. So I wish I could say there was an easy math calculator to do. There's not necessarily, but it takes a real educated champion to really vouch for this and to use all the evidence you can because it does matter and it does work.
I'll just jump in with one thing, because I think everything that was offered is spot on. People have choices. People can have lots of choices of where to go work. And frankly, there's an expectation of people that there are going to be resources available at their company, such as mental health support, and that there's, focus on diversity, equity, and inclusion. There's just expectation that's different now. And so frankly, I think the other piece is that if companies choose not to invest, they're going to start to not be able to attract and retain talent and labor. And you can start to quantify that too.
Absolutely. And I think it's another thing that's unique to an organization. You have to figure out what matters to you and measure it, right? And you, every organization will have a different way of doing that. But if you can figure that out and make it your own and measure what matters to your organization, then you will find the financial argument. You will find the facts to support what it is that you believe in, what you've made part of your corporate culture. So just to be respectful of time, we've got about 3 minutes left and we've had great questions coming in. So thank you all for joining today. Let's do real quick. Let's try and get some of these questions answered. What are some examples of the sessions you're holding for Mental Health Awareness Month? Someone want to jump in and give, I think Carrie, that was you were holding sessions. You want to rapid fire, give us some answers.
Oh gosh, I have to look at my list because they're all coming out through. We have someone talking about minding mental health during COVID-19, someone talking about how to support one another during challenging times, mindfulness session to experience how mindfulness can be used to combat anxiety and depression. We have a speaker on discussing anxiety, how to understand and address the fear in our lives. We're having some internal panels talking about the impact of COVID-19 and that on mental health. And then we have a Yammer community. I don't know if Yammer is a 3M thing or if it's basically like a board that where people can share. So there's that's a little smattering of things that are going on at 3M this month.
Thank you. And Brian, you had said you have, the organization has a physician burnout tool, or that there's one widely available. Anybody have any other tools that they use to evaluate organizational, emotional health? I know OneMind has a depression calculator that's really neat that will tell you the cost, the enterprise value of treating depression within your organization. And that's definitely one worth checking out. If you treat depression to remission, this is the enterprise value it would add to your organization. That's a neat one.
I was just gonna say, sometimes our surveys, and this isn't something we do broadly, but some of the individual teams have experimented with this. If the survey suggests somebody's fairly strongly burned out, they then get a subsequent survey that also looks for symptoms of depression, because we know the two are frequently linked, but not always. Because they, when I, you know, and you know, sometimes this is anonymous and sometimes it's not, but it's a way to help screen and understand the health of your team. We haven't done it globally for lots of reasons, but I think an individual leader could probably do that a little more effectively than we could on a large scale.
We also did this like energy check at 3M, where it would kind of was a survey to identify your energy level in four different quadrants: social, physical, mental, and I think like purpose driven, which was another unique way to start to see where you have low energy and high energy, and then was really around then action planning, how to address where you have some gaps. So I liked that. I can't remember who it was through.
Well, we are at 2 o'clock and I know time is always getting away from us in this virtual world. So I want to be respectful of everyone's time. And I want to thank Medical Alley for hosting this wonderful conversation and for putting it out there so that we have people listening that we can hopefully impact. Thank you to Carrie, Lisa, and Dr. Williams. It's been a pleasure to speak with you today and have this important conversation. And thanks for those that tuned in.